The recordings have now started.
I'll do a quick roll call. Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's IRD call, Monday the 15th of February. We have Jeremy Hitchcock, Yankun Yao, James Galvin, Steve Metallitz, Rob Hutchinson. From staff, we have Julie Headland, Dave Piscatello, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we have apologies from Rafik Damak. If you could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Gisela. That's helpful. So, Jeremy, if you would like, I could run through the agenda for today's call.
That'd be great. Thanks, Julie.
So, as you may recall, we did had quite a bit of discussion on question one at last week's call. You may recall that Dave Piscatello had done a setup of various questions for us to consider, and the question one was, you know, what do we require from internationalized registration data? And question 1A had quite a bit of discussion last week, and that was that a user can submit or have a domain name displayed in the IDN A label format or U label format. And I think we pretty much completed that discussion and last call on the 1st of February, and we provided a summary of that discussion to the list. Also on the last call, we started with question 1B, and that was, what do we require from internationalized registration data that registration data be extensible to accommodate users who would benefit from the ability to submit and have registration information displayed in familiar characters from local languages? And Steve Shang had provided a summary of comments on the list received on this question 1B, and we spent a good deal of discussion on the last call talking about domain names, various elements, including domain names, registrar, and entity names. We talked a little bit about postal addresses and email addresses, and just very briefly on telephone numbers, and Ram had suggested that maybe we pick up the thread with a little bit of further discussion on 1B, in particular with respect to telephone numbers and what kind of standard, if any, we might recommend there. We did have a little bit of discussion on the postal standard as well, and I know we had talked about whether or not how the UPU standard might apply and so on. But I'm not sure we really closed that discussion. So I would suggest that we, if others agree, start up with that summary and see if there are some further comments with respect to some of the other elements there, postal addresses, email addresses, telephone numbers, before we move on to question 1C. And some of the questions received so far on that as far as the summary are that David suggested for postal addresses that the conventions of the Universal Postal Union could be helpful. Bob on the last call noted that those might be difficult. It's not a computer-based standard and might be difficult to write a web page to capture manual addresses. Do you have more comments on the postal address issue? Dave, is there anything you wanted to add here?
I think that the one thing that we might want to consider, this is Dave Piscatello, I'm sorry. One thing we might want to consider is whether or not we want to treat contact information as a single data object or individual data objects. You know, when we're discussing them in the context of internationalizing the data. So by that I mean when we think about displaying contact information do we think about that contact information being, or each element of the contact information, and particularly the address, being displayed in the same language or in the same, take the same character set for a given language? So would one expect that if you were going to display a contact address, that one line would be in Chinese characters, another line would be in English characters, another line would be in extended Latin characters to use like Spanish tilde. So my feeling is that like a contact address is really a single data object, and whatever we would whatever guidelines we would describe for display and submission would say when you are submitting a contact address, it must be you must use the same characters character set for a given language, much as we have requirements on IBM for the composition of a label. Does that sound reasonable to everyone?
This is Steve Metalitz. Could I ask a question about that?
Of course.
Does that mean that you could not submit an address in two different scripts, for example, an address in Chinese script and then the same address in ASCII?
No, I mean in a given contact address submission, when if you say let's say that the web page is set up so that you can submit information in a character set for Chinese language. When you get to the fields for address and or street and apartment and city and whatever it is that you use in China, you would not be able to then say, well, I think I'll just use Russian. You'd have to submit it in using character sets or characters from a Chinese script. If there were also a requirement to submit it in English, the same would apply on whatever form that you would create to submit it in English. You wouldn't be able to use Chinese characters in that one. So it's essentially a no-mixed scripts prohibition on the address field. Now, I don't necessarily mean phone numbers, telephone numbers. I just mean address field.
Yeah, I understand that, and I think that makes sense, but that would mean that if we were to say that you had to submit it in ASCII, as well as in the local script, then you would have to have a separate field for that.
I think that's true, and I actually think that from a web input forms validation standpoint, just having written some scripts for web input, it seems to me that there are certain benefits in terms of preventing or protecting against invalid input when you do that. When you know what the script set is, you at least can filter out invalid characters.
So the question is, this is Jeremy Hitchcock, the question is whether or not different items of a contact or, I guess, location in some ways, because this is all dealing with some sort of postal code, is within the same script. But this kind of, this does relate a little bit to an assumption of whether or not we're displaying both U and A labels.
Well, that would be a domain name. So I'm trying to understand the granularity that we want to deal with here, because if we treat registration data, if we treat who is as one rigid object, and we say it's all got to be ASCII, or it's all got to be characters for a local script support, I think we're boxing ourselves into a solution that is really going to start to polarize the community, and some of the conversation that. Jay Daly and I have had in electronic mail regarding localization from Jay's perspective. You know, every registrar will accept whatever he wants to accept, and every registry will, you know, store what every registrar has accepted, and that's just the nature of things. That's one way to characterize this. Another way to characterize it is to say that let's look at this from each object of data in, you know, in a registration record and see what, by necessity, could remain ASCII. For example, sponsoring registrar and a sponsoring registrar's contact address, not something a registrant submits. And then start to explore what you would do with the individual other data objects, such as domain name. With domain name, we already have a solution, which is A label or U label or both. And frankly, I think that the world of automation can deal with whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And the world of humans can probably deal with whatever that is. Because we've had to deal with oddball strings in URLs for a long time. If you look at automatically generated URLs today, you'll see http://www.icann.org/security/committees/gibberish/gibberish/gibberish.htm.
Right.
And we're
about
very
the particular unique contact and the metadata about that person in terms of kind of a location or a postal. I don't want to use the word postal, but just the locale of each of the registrant information, the technical contact, or the admin contact.
Right. So the idea I've been mulling over is that if we can understand what we'd like to try to do in terms of individualizing or grouping objects in the registration data, then what might be useful would be to say, all right, let's apply this in real life, and let's go to Registrar X, who's accepting registrations in only local script Y, and see what that does when it goes back to a GTLD. See what that, you know, what the consequences are. So, I think we can try to test case everything once we understand what we think the requirements are on how the data should be submitted and displayed for each data object or group of objects. Does that make sense?
So any comments on I mean, do we want to talk then about each of these elements again on how we, I mean, we talked quite fairly extensively about, I think, domain names and registrar information last week. I don't think we got, we did not get that much into entity names, postal addresses, email addresses, telephone numbers. So we want to talk about how we think each one should be displayed, sort of to give us as much flexibility as possible, rather than looking at these as all one element. Did I capture that correctly, Dave?
Yes. I think that Jay and I actually had and several others had commented on telephone numbers. And fax numbers, and I think that that's, like domain names, relatively straightforward. Ideally, especially for automation, it would be very nice to simply say, that registrars would not accept anything in a field that was supposed to be a fax number or a telephone number that wasn't an Arabic number. And so if you're going to type in a U.S. phone number, you would always type in 10 Arabic numbers, and the same guideline would apply for other countries according to the way that they compose their telephone numbers. So we could actually knock off two. We have domain names, we know what to do there, and I think we have fax and phone, and it seems relatively straightforward. I don't know that other phones in the world actually, have substitutions for 1 through 0.
This is Steve Metallis. I mean, if Jay agreed to that, fine, but I would expect Jay to say, there's many countries where Arabic numerals are not widely used.
For phones?
I don't know what the story is for phones. I know for license plates and every all other types of places where you see numbers in the real world. But
well, this is, yeah, I mean, I imagine that maybe license plates don't use, you know, I can only speculate like you because I haven't been everywhere. But I can't remember any place that I have traveled in 25 years where a phone doesn't have a 1 through a 0.
Well, and Julie, I should point out that one of the comments that Jay had sent and Steve Shank had captured was he recommended that the working group consider this one solved by reference to E.123 internationalized notation for telephone numbers. And he sent a wiki link for that.
Well, I'm happy with that. I mean,
I'm fine with that, too. I just know that Jay's view seems to be that we should allow, we should be designing this so that people can use the script that they use in everyday life. But I'll take it because I agree with you. I've never seen a phone differently either. I do know that I guess people just use a separate script for phone numbers than they do for all the other purposes. But.
This is Steve Shang. I think this is a good idea, using just the E123 internationalized notation for telephone numbers. So currently, Ron mentioned last time that most of the phone numbers that we currently store in the registry or registrar database are currently not internationalized. So if we are to recommend this, some kind of a scripting needs to be done at the registry or registrar level to make them internationalized. Just want to raise that point.
That's a very good point. This is Dave again. If you look, go and you scan through who is, you know, one of the challenges in automation is that most Americans don't put a one in the field. Quite a few will just simply not put their area code, and it's not necessarily a malicious act. It's that if people don't ask you for an area code in some parts of the United States, you don't give an area code. So I think that there would have to be more syntactic effort on the part of registrars to clean up who is, but from my perspective, that's a good thing.
I think so. Are there any from the registrar that is on the call?
This is Jeremy. We're officially a registrar. We use the international E123 standard. It is somewhat of a, you know, for U.S. Residents, it's sometimes a confusing thing for them, but they kind of figure it out. And just as a kind of a question, we would want to use the international standard for numbers, not the national standard. Is that correct, Dave?
Yes, I think that would probably be a minor inconvenience, if any, to users and a benefit to automation.
Yeah, and whether the registrar does something in a user interface standard where they say what country is your phone number, and then the local part, or allowing just a raw text of plus 41717891, something along those lines. That's up to the registrar.
Well, I guess if we want to be that liberal, sure. I mean, I think so long as the registrar could do whatever he wants in the web page, so long as the only thing that ends up in the registration data are the Arabic numbers, that would be fine.
Arabic, and would you allow spaces as well, or pluses?
Because
I think
would allow submission. I mean, frankly, having written scripts, I would allow plus and parentheses or period or hyphens. But when I went to store the data or pass it to the registry, I would want to pass it just as numbers. And then if it comes back to me and I want to be I want to do something representationally, I could do so. But once you get into pluses and parentheses and hyphens and dots, they are very localized. You know, like what we consider an area code, you know, is not necessarily an area code in other countries. We
right.
mean the United States.
Just a plus sign and a space seems to be in the actual body of the E123 standard.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, they have parentheses. Hyphens are not allowed. Parentheses are used in the quote-unquote national flavor of a phone number, but it does not include the country code. So for the idea of world dialing, there's no sense of what the country of origin. So it would be basically 10 possible characters of space in a, which is irrelevant for the calling. It's just, I guess it would be case. In the sense of case preserving or space preserving, just for formatting, and then a plus sign to, I guess, is to designate the beginning of a phone number, of a fully qualified phone number, if you would.
Is that the display requirement, right? They don't talk about what the storage requirement is.
Under use of symbols. Yeah, it is only a display, of course, and they do say that phone numbers should be written in the form with those particular spaces. But
right, yeah.
As,
so
as you said, it's irrelevant for human or for the actual dialing component.
Yeah, so I guess the way that I would characterize that in a web form is that you could create a web form that would allow you to accept. You know, accept characters in addition to the Arab numbers. You would create a web display that would allow you to also display those characters. But when you submit and you receive data from the registry, you would want it to be strictly in Arabic numbers. And that would allow the most uniform set of characters for automation.
Yep, I think so.
Do we have anything else we want to discuss on telephone numbers? It seems like we're coalescing around the E123 standard and having a recommendation for only Arabic numbers in the information that's stored or that comes from the registry. Does that sound correct?
Julie, I'll summarize it for you if you want. I'll just write it and put it up on the list.
That'd be perfect. I'll send out a collective summary of this discussion sometime tomorrow. So, Dave, if you could do that, that would be very helpful. Shall we move on to one of the other elements? How do we want to address postal addresses? There was a little bit of discussion last week on the conventions of the UPU, but some concerns about how that could be, put into some kind of web form, I think.
Julie.
Yeah.
Before we do the postal address, which I think is harder, can we focus, get the email address out of the way, which I think is simpler.
Steve, this is Julie. That's a good suggestion. We discuss email addresses a bit?
So for the email address, Dave suggested the RFC 822 MIME conventions. I took a look at the conventions, and I think large part, it's a convention how to compose email, the different addresses to internationalize. I was wondering if we can make it simpler. The E123 standard also has a convention for email address, Dave. I don't know whether you think that would be sufficient.
As long as it's consistent with the successor documents to RFC 822, then that would be fine. I know that Jay was just pointed out that I'm an old person and I'm thinking in terms of the original RFC by Dave Crocker. So I'm happy to admit that that I'm an old fart and that I should follow the succession of documents. But as long as we're not creating opportunities for obfuscation, yeah, I think that's fine. If you want to get a copy of the standard and post a URL for us, Steve, that would be great.
Okay. I mean, it's very simple. It's basically, you know, a name ampersand example.com. That's it. And it has to
yes.
be, that's pretty much it. I don't know if for our purpose if that's enough or that's too simple.
This is Jeremy. I'll let you speak.
Yeah, this is Jim Galvin. I'm not familiar with E123's recommendations for email addresses, but I can tell you that there is an internationalized email address working group developing documents even now in the IETF. And I think that, going back just to what Dave said, I mean, I'm new to this group, so I don't know what the history is here in terms of preferences. But if you're going to go with IETF standards, then I think that that's the side that you want to go on. And it's that document that you want to follow and track. In fact, they just, I think it might actually have just been published or it's about to be published. So I think the timing is right to point to it. So again, I'm not expressing a preference between E123 or the internet standards, but I observe that there is an internet standard document, and we shouldn't lose track of that. So that's my comment.
So this is Dave. Would it be possible for us to post the two alternatives to the list and then just carry this discussion off to the list? Because I think that we're in agreement. We want to use the prevalent standard for composing email, and we just want to make certain we have the right citation.
Right. I think so. Yeah, we can do that. I can circulate those two links. I'll dig out the IETF working groups.
Yep, Jeremy, just as a quick comment about the various standards, I think the E123 sort of has a kind of a reference or is at least trying to acknowledge the RFC standard about actual encoding and representation of emails as far as what characters are allowed and what characters are not allowed. The notation in the actual E123 standard is kind of light, and I wonder if we may want to think about that as we're mulling over which one we prefer, and using the RFC email standard is probably it may be better to have that specificity, so that way registrars and registries would know what exactly to implement and what characters to actually allow.
I think that's an excellent point.
This is Yodian Kong speaking. Just now we have talked about internationalize the email address. I'm the member of email address internationalize the working group in IETF. I'm also the author for RFC 5336 for SMTP extension to support email internationalize the email address. So in current email address format, we only allow ASCII format like yodk@cnic.cn. But in future, we will soon have a Unicode-based internationalized email address. Since our Who is International Working Group is focused on future update of email address of address. So I think the email address should allow Unicode or UTF-8 encoding. Thank you.
I think that's a wonderful point too.
Well, you know, one observation I'd make, again, this is Dave, about the composition. If the IETF standard allows, you know, characters other than ASCII, mail systems must be able to process it, which means that systems that are designed to detect spam are able to process it, and so automation is probably accommodated, and humans are accommodated. So it sounds like whatever the standard is that emerges from this working group that Jim mentioned is probably the one that is going to be most, you know, most applicable over time.
Yes, I think so.
Okay, well, that's great. So, Steve, you're going to circulate some links. Do you need any information from Jim Galvin, Steve, to be able to point to the IETF standard that's about to be published?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Jim, if you wouldn't mind sending something on that to Steve Chang, that would be great. I can send you his email. I don't know that you have it. Or you could send it to the list. That would be perfectly fine.
Sure thing. Thanks.
And I, you have been added to the list, so you do have sending rights. So you're fully part of the group. Do we want to move on to the more complicated issue of postal addresses? Steve, what do you think?
Sure, I think so.
Actually, Julie, I'm going to ask whether there might be another easy one, and I'm making a big leap of faith that it's an easy one. But
go ahead, Dave. We're all always happy to hear easy ones.
Registrars provide provide a certain amount of the registration data, and registrants do not actually submit that. And the registrar is sponsoring registrar identification.
Hello, Dave?
Dave, we lost you. Dave?
Excuse me, this is the operator?
Yes.
Mr. Piscitello seems to be connected. There's just no sound coming from his line.
I'll send David Dabber and let him know that we're not... Oh, I see he's disconnected
now.
He's now
disconnected, yes, madam.
Right. So he'll, I'm sure he'll come back to join us momentarily. we'll just give him a moment, if that's okay. He's dialing back in, he tells me. Be here momentarily.
Hello.
Hello, Dave. Welcome back.
I'm sorry.
No problem. We're cut off in midstream. You were just talking about registrars and so on, and you might want to start back where you were.
Okay. So I think I began by saying that some of the registration data are collected, and submitted by the registrar, they include sponsoring data, all the dates regarding the creation and modification, and expiry, and I'm wondering whether it would be beneficial to simply say that since registrars already collect that data, it's already in ASCII 7. We could allow those data specifically to remain ASCII data. Is there really a requirement to be able to display those, perhaps display them, but it certainly doesn't seem that there's a requirement to submit them in something other than ASCII.
Any comments on Dave's suggestion?
This is Jeremy. I think that would be fine. I think the only reason why we would want to go back and perhaps modify that in the future, or that we defer, is that if there's ever a standard or a requirement that ASCII 7 is not the only thing that's used. Do you know where that actually comes from? Is that just a RAA thing?
Well, I think it's just historical. It's just legacy, Jeremy. Or Dave again. And it's in the RAA, but it's just information that the registrars knew that, and ICANN and the registrars, through the agreement, acknowledged as being a registrar responsibility. One of the values of leaving that that information in ASCII is that there is always a party that that whoever is running automation will be assured that they can reach. And, you know, there would be, hopefully, in the future, if other RIA amendments are accepted, there will be a list on an ICANN site of accredited registrars, and that list would also include contact information for abuse points of contact. And, you know, if those other amendments were to be put in place, there would be a much clearer path for for examining abuse and incidents on the part of any party than there is today.
Dave, this is Steve. I think 2 weeks ago we discussed about this a little bit, and Jay is, taking the position, Jay is kind of against it, essentially. But I think at the end of the discussion, he is willing to let the registrar contact information, the name of the registrar at least to stay ASCII. One question that some of the working party member raised is, for the gTLDs, this is fine, but for the ccTLDs, whether that's okay, there are some discussion about that.
Yeah, this is Steve Metallis. I have notes too that I think we already discussed this, and that was the only issue was whether in the ccTLDs where the registrars, if there are any, are not subject to the registrar accreditation agreement, then we might not necessarily be the case that this information is available in ASCII.
So is Jian Kang still on the line?
Yeah.
So I was wondering, Jian Kang, how does CINIC handle like this issue? Do you require that the registrars in China to display at least their English name in the Whois?
English name, what kind of name?
So, for example, so I guess my question is, would you think this will pose problems for ccTLDs? So, for registrar, when we do the internationalized Whois, we still require ASCII, their name to be displayed in ASCII for automation purpose. Would you see that problematic, or you think that's okay?
For currently, for example, in international domain names, for actually the name, you mean domain name or just a country
name?
No,
not the domain name, just the name of the registrar, the name of the sponsoring registrar.
Currently the name of the registrar is displayed in Chinese. So we have Chinese about China. Example is in China. There's first column is domain name, second is domain name status, third is content information of domain name, then is registrar of domain name. Then,
okay. So for the registrar of domain name, that's currently displayed in Chinese.
Yeah.
I see.
So, do you have an English page for registration as well?
No. Maybe you just use Google for searching. No, but we do not display English name of registry. Just
okay.
You mean registrar?
Yeah.
Mm.
Register.
And
this is Julie. I'm just looking through the notes from our last meeting. Know that Jay had noted that CCTLDs, different CCTLDs handle output very differently, and that he didn't think it was in the scope of this working group to recommend a standard for CCTLDs, although it might be useful to provide a toolkit or some kind of guidelines for each data.
This is Dave. The one observation, that I'd make is that, ultimately what we come up with here would probably be something that would go to the GNSO and through a PDP process and be applied to GTLDs. The hope would be that it would be sufficiently robust that the same conventions could be adopted by all TLDs. And I think that's all we can really say. As Jay said, it is out of scope for us to say, or other than to encourage CCTLDs to read what we've done and to participate and make certain that we're not making life more challenging for them, and for everyone else by creating something that's not tractable.
So, Jian-Kang, this is Steve again.
Okay.
Is there any a particular reason that you don't display the English name of the registrar?
No particular reason. We will be because currently we just display Chinese name because most this who is information is most used by Chinese. By Chinese, maybe English name is not used for them. Not particular reason. If I can request the display English name too, maybe we display the English name too. I think no particular reason.
Right. So I think that's well said. Currently, most of the Whois are used, the queries are used within China, and then, we want them to understand Chinese. So one of the reasons why we may want registrar to display their English name is mostly for abuse context. So, for example, if some domain name registered in China was involved in some kind of malicious abuse, And a company, for example, in an investigator in United Kingdom wants to investigate. So the first thing he needs to do is to contact the registrar. Probably he's not going to be able to get in touch with the registrant. So he will likely to contact the registrar. And if only having it in Chinese may make it difficult for someone in UK to contact that, that's the rationale, I think. Yeah.
I think some Chinese domain name is registered in overseas, but in overseas they will register English information in our database. For their information, we will display English registry.
Right.
But
right.
If the domain name is registered in China, mainland China, then it is because they provide us with Chinese information, so we just display Chinese information.
Okay.
This is different.
Right. Yeah. I'm just trying to think if, for example, if someone register, I think I'm not just picking on China. This could be true for any other localized script. For example, Japanese or Russian. It's the same case. Because you are from CINIC, that's why we're just using China for example. We're not implying anything. I'm just saying, for example, if someone from China, you know, a malicious user register a domain in China and hosting a website that's engaged in malicious activity, someone else from other outside China may want to get in contact with that registrar.
Mm.
So do you see my reasoning? I mean, I think that's what we're reasoning why, you know, registrar's information may need to contain ASCII, may need to contain English.
So I think you are right. I think should both the registrar's information should be displayed both in English and Chinese. I think you are right, but currently our CINI only provide one information, one language information.
Okay, I see. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks. This is Julie. Do we want to have we completed our discussion on that one? Do we want to move on or other comments on display of registrar names information? We want to take up the issue of postal addresses. We've got about a little less than 10 minutes left here.
This is Jeremy. Why don't we start it off, and we could think of some things that we could work on over the list over the next couple of weeks.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy. And Dave, did you want to a little bit about your initial recommendation?
I'll just restate sort of the first principle, not necessarily an entire one, but just that it would be valuable to have or to treat a contact address as a single data object or group of objects, and that we should not allow mixed scripts in any contact address. And that's not necessarily saying that you can't have ASCII and local character, but just simply saying that no matter what you choose, it should always be, always be one character set, and pretty much following the kind of guidelines that IDNA set for labels.
This is Steve Metallitz. This is basically your question 1E, right?
God, you remember my questions better than I did.
So I'm just looking. I'm looking at the list here, and I think everyone would agree with that. But what you just said sort of presented it as an either or when it might be a both and. I mean, I thought we had not. Well, I know we haven't come to rest on this question of whether this type of data needs to be displayed in ASCII, even if it originates in a non-ASCII script. That could be the outcome, and so it's not really either or. It could be both and again, getting back to what we said at the beginning of the call, I think you're just saying that those would have to be separate data fields. There might be a data field for the local script and a data field for ASCII.
Yes, this is essentially, I guess, it really is 1E. And I'm very specifically trying to separate the issue of whether or not there are two or one, and if they're one, which is it, from whatever you choose. You know, if you have one and it's a local script, you must not allow mixed scripts in that. If you have one and it's ASCII, you must not allow characters that are not in the ASCII 7 set. If you allow both, then in both the ASCII case and the local script case, you can't have mixed scripts. So those are the conditions that I would want to impose.
Yes, Dave. I think Jian Kang in the email discussion groups also mentioned that if all data are requested to be in to use UTF-8, that should be no problem. And he also mentioned that, along the same line, that, you know, mixed scripts should be prohibited. I don't know what you think of that.
I guess I didn't know that you could actually represent every character in UTF-8. I thought that there were some languages where UTF-16 was required. But I'm not an expert in that field. We'd have to ask someone like Tina.
Okay.
So if what Jingtang is saying is correct for all, you know, all international languages, then that I don't have a problem with, you know, postulating that. Yeah. You know. The only difference is that if you use UTF-8 for English, you can introduce characters that are not necessarily desirable.
Yes, homographic attacks. Yeah, I see. So, yeah, I think that may pose. But would that be a critical issue for? So, Dave, let me summarize. What you're saying is, okay, if we for UTF-8 or any of the UTFs, essentially, you know, UTF-8 or 16, represent other languages, that would be perfectly fine. But if they represent English, you know, someone may replace some ASCII characters with some Cyrillic characters that look, you know, very similar to English. And that might be a problem, right?
This is Jian Kang Yao speaking. Actually, UTF-8 is a kind of encoding. ASCII encoding is one of UTF-8 encoding. Unicode including ASCII characters. So UTF-8 display ASCII information is no problem. In computer storage, both the format of ASCII character in UTF-8 and ASCII character in ASCII or current USA ASCII is the same. So there's no problem.
But what I mean is the alphabet for UTF-8 is much larger than ASCII. So maybe, you know, if someone wants to display a domain name, you know, in English, they can substitute some of the, you know, UTF-8 alphabet, such as in Cyrillic, and replace some of those. I think that's what I mean.
Yeah, I think... You guys are actually saying relatively the same thing. UTF is the encoding, and ASCII is a subset of UTF-8. And I was talking not about encoding, but about script. And so, yeah, if what we want to you know, ensure is that you don't allow a mixed script in a contact address. And if you think about it, in the natural world, we don't typically see addresses being written in mixed scripts, and people, by convention, will write their address in their own script, unless they're going to an international destination. What I'm trying to say here is that we've established criteria for IDM labels that protect us against homographic and other deception attacks by prohibiting the mixing of scripts. And it seems that would also be useful in contact address.
Any comments on that? This is Julie, and I should point out that we're now at the top of the hour, so I think we need to wrap up our discussion, agree on the timing for our next meeting. Any further comments?
I mean, we'll obviously provide a summary on the list of this discussion, and I think pick up where we left off, both on the list and at our next meeting, and we will again encourage people to provide comments to the list. Is there anything anybody would like to add at this point?
I just have one question, Mrs. Dave, and that is there any intent to give a report in Nairobi?
And this is Julie. There's certainly an opportunity, if this group would like, to provide a report at the ESSAC open meeting in Nairobi, which is probably going to be scheduled for the afternoon of Tuesday the 9th. But I'm not entirely sure who in this group is going to be in Nairobi. I know, Jeremy, you are not, as you mentioned.
I'm not. I think Jim is. Dave, are you in Nairobi? No?
No, I'm going to be in New York.
And Steve,
this is Jim Galvin. I mean, while I'll be in Nairobi, I'm relatively new to this group, and I may not be the best choice to represent this group. That'd be an interesting fallback if that's really where we are, but I'm not sure I want to step up.
Well, let me, Jeremy, since you're one of the co-chairs, do you think it would be useful to provide even just a brief status update of you know, where the group is and what they've been doing, you know, what we've been talking about and where the conversation is so far at the ESSAC open meeting? And obviously that wouldn't necessarily be you, but I could check and see if Edmund might be available. I don't know if he's attending.
I think it'd be at least useful to give a heads up of what the work that we're doing and what the expected outcome is, just so that way people aren't, they're both looking for it and there's not duplicate work that's going on. Just in the sense of a quick, you know, 2-minute, 5-minute update on what's going on.
Sure. So this is Julie. I'll check with Edmund and see if he is going to be there. And Ram Mohan has also been quite active in the group. I know he's not here today, but he might be willing to give a short presentation. I can check with him if Edmund might not be available, if that would be okay with you.
That'd be great. And Ram has a good background on scripts and IDN and representation, so I think that would work out well.
Right. Well, I'll take that as an action item, Jeremy, and check with Edmund first and then Ram.
That'd be great.
And our next meeting is scheduled for, would be scheduled 2 weeks from now if we follow our convention. That would be Monday, March 1st. And we've been rotating time, so that would be 1900 UTC, 2 o'clock Eastern time and 11 o'clock. Are there any objections to that? Great. Then I'll go ahead and schedule that. We do not have a meeting scheduled for Nairobi, a face-to-face meeting, and I think that's contingent on whether or not we really feel like we'll have enough members at Nairobi. I know there's a lot of people who aren't going, so we might, certainly we could do teleconference, be able to allow people to attend by teleconference, but we would have just had a meeting just the week prior. Is there any sense that we should have a face-to-face meeting in Nairobi? Shall I poll the members and see if there's a desire for that?
I think you could poll to find out how many people are present. I'm just looking at the list. I don't see all that many people that I recognize that, you know, as regular attendees, and many of the regular attendees are not going to be there. So I'd pull the list first to see what attendance would be.
I'll do that. I'll take that as an action item, Julie.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to go. I would lean towards not really having a face-to-face meeting. I think that we have some pretty good progress, and just because of the remote participation and the different time zones that we're kind of working through these issues pretty well.
Thanks, Jeremy. Anything anybody, Jeremy or others, would like to add on today's call? Then I think we can go ahead and adjourn this call, and I want to thank everyone for participating, and we'll provide a summary in the next day and encourage all of you to continue the discussion on the list, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Julie.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.